You have a nice weekend in South Wales.
Yeah, it was absolutely amazing. Better than Royal Cinque-Ports, I think. It's right on the coast, and there was sort of no protection on the course from the wind. It was blowing an absolute gale, but I quite enjoyed that. I quite enjoyed sort of the challenge of that.
It was part of the Lynx Champs, isn't it? You know that, yeah, you grew up on Lynx.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, it was amazing. I played okay. I think I would have got about 29 points if we'd done a Stableford, which is okay on a new course with a lot of wind. I got a couple of birdies, which I was quite pleased with. But yeah, it was amazing. It's definitely my sort of top three or top five courses.
Well, it's strange, yeah. Top three for someone who grew up on RSG and Cinque-Ports.
I think it's definitely better than Cinque-Ports.
Is it an open venue?
It's definitely good enough to be.
It's just that the thing with open, work, yeah, always, isn't it?
Well, exactly, yeah. That's the thing that stops Cinque-Ports ever hosting the Open ever, just because there's no space between the holes. It's probably not better than St George's, but I did absolutely love it. And then the next day we played on Saturday, we played a place called Shirehampton, which was 15 quid each and a par 68, which was fun. It was fun. It wasn't quite fourth call, but it was fun.
It's not quite the same, is it? I played Shirehampton back in my uni days at Bristol. More importantly, what did you think of Bristol as a town?
We didn't actually spend much. Well, we didn't spend any time in Bristol town, actually. We'd sort of, my cousin lives in Nailsea, so we spent more time in around there. So we didn't actually go into Bristol, but no, yeah, it was a cracking weekend. A nice area.
Shaking my head. That is incredibly disappointed.
I know.
So it's the best down city in the country by an absolute mile.
I'll be back down there soon, no doubt. Not even as far as I thought it was either. Only about 3 hours to drive, and you don't really have to change motorways either. You're just sort of driving a straight line downwards. Which
the motorway system in this country getting high praise on the slam this morning. I love that. Did you stop at Gloucester Services? That's the most important thing.
I didn't stop on the way, but I stopped on the way.
At Gloucester Services?
No, I stopped on the way back at Pilton Park.
Behave.
But what is Gloucester good, is it?
Gloucester Services is the farm shop services where you go in and you get a lovely home cooked meal.
Oh, if I'd have known that.
It's absolutely fantastic. And next time also go about an hour and a half further and you'll find some more delightful Lynx golf courses.
Mm, definitely.
We played together last week for the first time. Mm. That was exciting. Yeah. So we're doing some shoe testing at the moment, and I was testing out some Adidas numbers and you were testing out some New Balance and FootJoy numbers. And we played, you had a right old week, didn't you? You played All Woodley for the first time and then you played Royal Porthcawl for the first time. Absolutely unbelievable.
Both incredible golf courses, to be fair, as well.
I was just happy to be back on the course of my bizarre injury is past me. And I think that my golfing journey is resuming for 2023 and I'm excited about it. It was good. It's good. It's All Woodley's good, isn't it? Because it's absolutely wide open and you can just rip your driver.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I'm gonna try and play more golf this year. I didn't play much golf last year. Hopefully get on and Woodley a few more times because I did enjoy that. I thought it was a great golf course. You can see why it's used for regional qualifying anyway.
And you've got Moortown and Sandmoor right next door as well.
Yes, triangle. I've heard good things about Moortown particularly as well.
Good. All right. Well, should we talk about proper people playing proper golf?
Yep, shall we?
Right, we have actually got a special guest on the podcast today. I thought as it was match play week and with the Ryder Cup 200 odd days away, I thought it would be good to get a Ryder Cup expert on. So I invited Rob Giannotti, who some of you may know as Blue on the Board if you're across social media, or you may have read his website of the same name. So I had a chat with him this morning, Monday morning, straight after the conclusion of the WGC. I tell you what, you and I will have a little chat now. Let's do our little bits now, and then I'll put Rob's interview in after that. Before we get going, I do just want to briefly touch on the absolutely bonkers start to the year that friends of the Slam Callaway are having to 2023. The Paradigm driver, Matt, has now been used by 7 of the 13 PGA Tour winners since the turn of the year. Sam Burns, of course, was the latest. He uses the Paradigm driver, fairway woods and irons, as well as the Apex wedges, Odyssey putter and Chrome soft ball to thrash Cam Young in the match play final. And on this side of the Atlantic, Nick Backham, I think is how we pronounce it.
Mm-hmm.
He won in just his 12th DP World Tour start in South Africa. Is also a Callaway staffer. Incredible start to the year. Can't wait to get some in the bag.
It's no coincidence, is it?
One thing I noticed at Woodley was that your irons are incredibly old. I think we're talking like 2007, 2008. Mm. Perhaps we need to build our friendship with Callaway and see if we can get some paradigm.
If you can give them a nudge for me, it's a much needed change I need to my golf game, definitely.
It absolutely blows my mind that you are playing off seven with these absolute shovels from 15 years ago.
It'll be a sad day when I finally say goodbye to them, though. They've given me some good times, to be fair.
You don't need to say goodbye to them. You can frame them and put them on the wall. Yeah, I'll frame them. They're relics.
Yeah.
Right, let's just talk about the match play, because it was an incredible week. A big talking point of the week was that this tournament, at the moment, is not on the PGA Tour schedule for next year. Austin Country Club and Dell Technologies, who have sponsored it for the last X amount of years, are not going to be involved anymore, despite the fact apparently they wanted to. That's probably a whole other story. The big talking point this week was that this tournament is going to be a huge miss from next year. How do you feel about that? I mean, it is wonderful to watch, isn't it? I mean, Sunday, we talk about the fact that there's not a lot of golf going on. There's too many adverts. And actually, it was a bit anticlimactic because we had this absolute thrashing in the final where the final ended up finishing about an hour and a half before the consolation match between Rory McIlroy and Scottie Scheffler. In fact, it finished so far beforehand, I went to bed and I didn't even know Rory McIlroy had finished third until Monday morning. So where are you standing on all this?
No, I've thought this last week, if anything, was a massive advert for match play golf. It was such a good event, I thought. The bits I watched were just so dramatic. Like, you can't beat match play in terms of, you could just lose two balls and just lose one hole and go one down. But the next hole, you can get a birdie and really sort of blow your partner away. Unexpectedly, and just the things that were happening. Like, I think Xander Schauffele was up in his match against McIlroy virtually the entire match, and then McIlroy went one up for the first time after 18 and won.
Yeah, McIlroy didn't leave. McIlroy didn't lead until he won on 18.
Yeah, it's just things like that. It's things like that with match play. I think this week just showed that it's such a terrible shame that they're probably not gonna have a match play event next year. It's so fun. I think this year particularly showed how much of a shame it was. We had four like superstars of the PGA Tour in the semi-finals. We had upsets, players like John Rahm going out in the group stage. It's more of a level playing field in that way, I think, because in stroke play, you'd obviously fancy John Rahm to beat Heath Mitchell and Ricky Fowler and Billy Horschel in his group. But in match play, it's such a more level playing field. It's so
it's like the FA Cup, isn't it? Like, anyone can beat anyone really on their day.
Yeah, just so many highlight reel moments, such as like Rory's drive that landed on the 18th, that went to about 4 feet on the 18th green.
I took my son to football on Saturday morning, as I always do, and a couple of other dads that I talk to who, they like golf. They're not obviously as into it as we are. But the first thing they said was, God, did you see Rory's drive last night?
Yeah, incredible. And that golf course, Austin Country Club, it looks so much fun to play. It looks like such a good match play venue in terms of sort of risk and rewards, going for greens, going over water, playing the contours. It's a very sort of contoured course, it looks like. So it's such a shame that it looks like we're not going to have a match play event next year. I'm sure there will be. I'm sure it's not done forever, because it's more to do with sponsors than anything, isn't it? I don't think it's the actual entertainment value that's being doubted. You could argue the final day could be a bit boring with the third and fourth place playoff and the final only two matches being on in the evening, but we can cope with that for one day a year, can't we?
I know that the third place playoff is because obviously it needs to be because of OWGR and prize money. They need to separate first, second, third and fourth. But they don't do it for the losing quarter finalists. They all finish tied fifth. So why can't the losing semi-finalists just be tied third? Neither Rory McIlroy nor Scottie Scheffler wanted to play that match. Like, no athlete in the history of sport, any sport, has ever said, oh, do you know what I want to do? I want to play another match just means essentially nothing. I mean, Rory McIlroy, Scottie Scheffler, they're not in it for world ranking points. They absolutely, neither of them need the money. I suspect if they could have done at the start, they would have just said, we'll split the pot and we'll go.
It's just the same in any sport, to be fair, isn't it? The third and fourth place playoff is just the most pointless thing. Like, it's the final we all wanted to see. No disrespect to Cameron Young and Sam Burns, but we wanted to see McIlroy and Scheffler in the final as opposed to the third and fourth place playoff. Especially as they all went to extra holes in the semi-finals. And then you go out, and then you've got to play another match, which means nothing. I was watching it with my flatmates, and I sort of said, what could the PGA Tour do if, like, McIlroy and Scheffler just went home? I'd be so tempted, if that was me, to just go home, just leave. Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't get their money, would they? I suppose.
No, they wouldn't. They wouldn't. It would be a bit of bad taste there as well. But I thought it sort of represents a return to form for Sam Burns, because he hadn't actually been playing that well in the lead up. He finished well at the Valspar, because that's sort of his event, isn't it? But he'd missed cuts at the Genesis and the Arnold Palmer, tied 35th at the Players. Very much represents a return to form for Burns when he hadn't started the season that well.
And going into the Masters, of course, the first men's major of the year, you've got Sam Burns obviously in good form now. You've got defending champion Scottie Scheffler's in good form. People like Jason Day, who have got good Masters records. Mm. You know, there's someone to look out for. Rory obviously going after the Grand Slam. Like, how excited are you for the Masters now, 2 weeks away from the tournament?
Yeah, I can't wait. I really, really want it to sort of just arrive this week. As I say, we're listing off players there. Cameron Young must be thinking what he's got to do to win a PGA Tour event, but it seems like he might be a bit more resurgent with a new caddy. Is it Paul Tsory? Is that how you pronounce it? It used to be Webb Simpson's caddy, I think. So he's in the bag, and a lot of these caddy changes proved to be quite fruitful. You know, with Scottie Scheffler, Brookie Fowler's playing a bit better with the new caddy, I think.
I did enjoy that little statement. I mean, first of all, why are you putting out like a 300-word statement about Webb Simpson splitting up with a caddy? And Webb Simpson's obviously a really nice guy, but he's not playing very well. But it was like, it was just a really long-winded way of going, yeah, do you know what? He's been offered like a more lucrative bag because he's going to go and make absolutely millions with Cam Young, whereas I'm missing cuts left, right, in the centre. So
I was sort of reading the statement. I sort of saw it as an initial tweet. I thought, God, what's this? Like, he's not unwell, is he, or anything like that? Yeah, but no, just split up with his caddy.
Did you think there was one talking point during the week at the match play was this strange graphic that the Golf Channel put up? Now, for those that didn't see it, the Golf Channel put up a graphic of the last, or all the winners back to Luke Donald in 2011, but they missed off 2020, obviously, because of COVID, but they also missed off 17 and 18, which were won by Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson, who are now LIV Golf players, of course. Now, for me, I'm looking at that thinking, well, hang on a second. What you've actually done is you've just drawn more attention to LIV Golf. If you had just put Dustin Johnson and Bubba Watson in there, no one would have been talking about it. Instead, whether you're a LIV Golf fan or not, you've got all of social media, golf Twitter, whatever, having a pop at you about that. The words like pathetic and petty were thrown around. And to be honest with you, it's really difficult to argue with that.
I completely agree. I'm assuming it was the PGA Tour's decision to leave them out of that graphic.
Well, that's part of the discussion, isn't it? Was it the Golf Channel under orders from the PGA Tour? Was it the Golf Channel solely? Was it the PGA Tour's decision? It's obviously difficult to tell, but obviously both those companies have come under fire for it.
I think my bet would be the PGA Tour's decision. But yeah, like all the words that have already been used, disappointing, pathetic, petty, just unnecessary. It's more evidence that the PGA Tour are taking all this LIV Golf stuff very personally, aren't they? The way Monahan's spoken in a few press conferences since the emergence of LIV Golf, he's taken things very personally, almost to the point where you think he's going to get emotional talking.
They don't need to, though. I feel like I've said this 1,000 times. I'm boring myself with it, but it doesn't matter if you've lost players like DJ and Bubba and Patrick Reed, because you've got all these other guys like Sam Burns and Cameron Young coming through. I mean, Cameron Young was heavily linked to LIV. You've got all these guys coming through, and you've got Will Zalatoris. It was Freddie Couples, wasn't it, who said that Zalatoris had been offered something ludicrous like $130 million. And he just said, well, no, because I play on the PGA Tour and that's where I want to make my name. So for every DJ and Reed and Bubba, you've got Burns and Young and Zalatoris. Like, these are the guys that are up and coming. These are the guys we're getting excited about.
Yeah.
I went a bit talk sporty there. Sorry about that.
you can't erase history. These are the winners of these tournaments. And it's become a bit of a theme with some of the PGA Tour's content on social media and on broadcasts. In the lead up to events, specifically, I remember before the Century, what's the one at Kapalua, the Century Tournament of Champions?
Yeah.
Before that, they showed like a highlight reel of the best ever shots. And in any normal year, Bubba's driver off the deck would have been mentioned, would have been included, as would DJ's drive on a par four that went to about 2 feet.
Yeah.
But they were removed, obviously, deliberately. And it's just things like this. The DP World Tour are guilty of it as well in previews to previous events such as the DP World Tour Championship or the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship. In previews, they refuse to mention past winners like Lee Westwood and things like that in their previews. So it's just, there's no need for it. Like, they've taken it, and the DP World Tour have taken it so personally, all this tension. You can't erase past winners. You can't erase history books and record books. And it's just disappointing. But I wasn't surprised, to be honest, to see that.
Talking of record books and history books, the Ryder Cup is coming up. So as I mentioned at the top of the podcast, I spoke to Rob Giannotti, who is the owner of blueontheboard.com. It's a very interesting chat. We talk about Europe's chances this year, how Luke Donald will be feeling after the match play. So let's have a little listen to that, and I'll come back with you in half an hour or so. Right, thanks for joining us, Rob, on the Slam podcast. How are you? Are you well?
Thanks, Alex. Yeah, fantastic to be here. Good morning.
So I know you because I follow you on Twitter, and you are a Ryder Cup obsessive. I think it's fair to say you run the account and the website and the blog Blue on the Board. So just before we start, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your obsession with the Ryder Cup.
Right, okay. So where to begin? So yes, you are correct. I run blueontheboards.com. Also have a bit of a social presence. I do a weekly blog every Wednesday on all things Ryder Cup related. Sort of in the very crowded world of golf on social spaces, etc. There's a lot that's, you know, on the week to week tour events in the majors and stuff. But I'm that loser, that idiot that likes to look on January the 1st at, you know, how Matthew Fitzpatrick's faring in the world points list and things like that for Ryder Cup. So I started Blue on the Board in 2021. So for the Whistling Straits Ryder Cup, basically because it's my favorite event in sports. So as we've just seen this week with the WGC match play, you have the head-to-head competition. There's so much that goes into the psychology of it, the, you know, personal rivalries. There's, you know, the personal playing records of people. There's the individual stories as well as like the group competition. And I've just always loved it. So have been a bit of a nerdy savant, I suppose you could say, since the Belfry 2001 was the first one I got like really into. And then ever since, it's been like, you know, real must watch stuff. And then just as time's gone on, I've got more and more interested in, you know, what goes on behind the scenes and, you know, the leadership aspect of it and stuff like that. So, yeah,
I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head there for us nerdy golf fans, because we are, I mean, essentially we're all golf fans, so we are all a bit nerdy, and the Ryder Cup epitomizes that geeky statisticians in all of us, really, doesn't it? Like, how, I mean, I'm the same as you. I absolutely love just getting into Wikipedia or the Ryder Cup website or whatever and just getting, nailing right down into the stats and who played who and who beat who and who scored how many points. I mean, the other day I was writing a piece about Jason Duffner, and I completely forgot that he was the top scorer when he played. Like, you wouldn't think that, would you? He was America's top scorer that year. I mean, they want to forget 2012, yeah. Of course they do. But you know, that it was a good week for Jason Duffner, and a bad Sunday for America, really.
Yeah, it was a good week for Jason Duffner until he met McIlroy Poulter. On Saturday afternoon.
The turning point of that Ryder Cup.
And they did their run, but yeah, no, you're completely right, Alex. And you know, it's always really interesting that certain players have like literally made a career from the Ryder Cup. We associate Poulter and Monty and people like that, Paul McGinley, with, you know, with their Ryder Cup exploits. Whereas, you know, they never lifted a major. Sergio was obviously slightly different after he after he won the Masters a few years back. But then you've got guys like Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and Jim Furyk, and they've all got losing Ryder Cup records, which is absolutely nuts when you consider their stature in the game and things like that. And it's funny. So if I were to ask you, so we're talking about nerdy golf stuff here, who won the 2012 US Open? But what happened at Medina in 2012?
Yeah, well, yeah.
You immediately know, and it seems to resonate more than any other event, or certainly for me anyway. So yeah.
So just tell us a little bit about what blue on the board is, because you know, you go in there, like you say, you've got you. What I really like about it is you break down the Ryder Cup team as it stands each week, as it were, or after each tournament week.
Yeah. So the main sort of output, if you like, that blue on the board has is, so every Wednesday I will write a blog. The last thing the world needs is another golf podcast, but you know, obviously keep listening to this one, everyone, because it's fantastic. But yeah, so every Wednesday I write it's a combination of what the results have been and who's played well, a running of the standings. So yeah, as you said, with it's the US team is extremely straightforward, but obviously with Team Europe, you've got the two different points lists. And so right now we've got someone like Yannick Paul is in the automatic qualification spots because he plays on the DP World Tour. But if you look at where he is on the world points list, in terms of like the world ranking points he's accrued, he's miles down the list. So it's like, it's got that sort of interesting sort of chemistry to it. And it would be interesting to see if someone like him, or someone that is solely based on the DP World Tour, is able to qualify.
How do you feel? Yeah. Just to come away from, just briefly interrupt, where do you land on that, having two different lists for the Euro? Because I know it splits opinion in the golf world, particularly among Europeans. Where do you stand on that?
Yeah, so I think there has to be a place for you know, a route to qualify to the team for the rank and file European based DP World Tour players, because it's an arm of the European Tour that runs Ryder Cup Europe. So from that perspective, I totally make sense. And look, 20 years ago, whatever it was, they had to change the qualification criteria because they were having to use picks on Sergio and Jesper Parnovic, and there's a name I haven't thought about in a while. But yeah, they were completely sort of like stymied, if you like, in terms of that. But you need to get the top players in the team, and the balance of power, sadly, has just completely shifted, where all the top Europeans just play the PGA Tour now, unless, you know, they do a Thomas Peters and they head over to LIV. So yeah, look, I don't dislike the two points tables. It's not that difficult, really. What makes it's become more difficult for DP World Tour players to qualify, simply because if a player wins a major, they're going to get on the European points list, like, a you know, Molinari's done, Rahm did it a couple of years ago. It makes it one less spot for the likes of the Bob McIntyres, the Rasmus Højgaards to get in sort of on merit. So there needs to be a place for it, for sure. But even this year, when they've gone to, there's only three that are going to make it off that European list rather than four, which was the case in Wisconsin. It's now going to be harder for them, but there's more flexibility with there being six picks now and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see if some of those guys that play on the DP World Tour, that played in the Hero Cup in, you know, in the winter, sort of get picked because of their own attributes, despite missing out on the ranking points and maybe not playing in the majors and stuff like that. So,
well, we are seeing that shift now, aren't we, into more wildcard picks for the captains. Do you think, now I'm going to play devil's advocate here and be a bit cynical about it, do you think that's because the Ryder Cup Europe are looking at it and going, right, this is how we build the strongest possible team, because we have this points list and it's giving, as you call them, the rank and file players from the DP World Tour a chance to play on the Ryder Cup? Are they then offsetting that by going, well, okay, we're going to give Luke Donald six picks instead of the usual three or four that we've seen in recent decades?
So I think Luke Donald himself has said when they changed the criteria for this year that Eduardo Molinari had a huge say in that. And, you know, the nerds amongst us will know that he's a real sort of stats guru and advises leading players on either side of the Atlantic about course strategy and which events they should be entering and all sorts of stuff like that. So it must be data backed. And we had a scenario at Whistling Straits where, because of the pandemic, Steve Stricker then got more picks and was able to skip over the Patrick Reeds and Webb Simpsons and people like that in favour of Scotty Scheffler, who was further down the list or whatever. Whereas Harrington had just three, and we had that terrible week at Wentworth where no one knew where they were going to end up in the points race and stuff like that. And someone like Alex Noren or Justin Rose, that was like absolutely flying, had to be left off the team because Lee Westwood, who didn't have a top 20 since, I think he was like in the top three in the players that year, and then didn't have a top 20 worldwide until the Ryder Cup, but he still got in on the last, on the last qualification place. And then he lost all his pairs matches. I think he won his singles at Whistling Straits, but there must be data behind it in terms of like the points contributions of that last qualifier versus if you get that captain's wildcard pick. Yeah, we'll see. Like, it's as we just touched on, the European Tour run the Ryder Cup from the European perspective. They have to have that route in, but it has made it harder. And look, now that the golfing landscape is shifting even more, and this is before you even factor in LIV, with is the DP World Tour, where does the strategic alliance sort of land? Where is someone like a Bob McIntyre, for example, so a top 100 player in the world, he's just not getting the opportunities to play against the best names and stuff like that. So how does that affect him being part of the Ryder Cup if he's not spending time with the Rorys and Rahms of this world? So it's there's still a lot of unknowns, aren't there, and it will be interesting to see how it all lands out. And I'm really interested to see what the team looks like this year, because Europe is absolutely going through a change.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we talk about stats and we talk about Molinari, of course, and his role in that. But what if you go back over the last X amount of Ryder Cups, and on paper you look at it and you think, right, the US team is far stronger than the European team. That has just been the case for many, many years. And yet, certainly since the turn of the millennium, the European team has dominated this competition. Now, we want to use that phrase, team spirit, but it's such a cliche, and I know we talk about it all the time in terms of the Ryder Cup European sphere, but we can't take that away for this year, can we? So you're talking there about what we've got, a potentially very interesting Ryder Cup, because it could be a very different team makeup to what we're used to. But is that going to come at the expense of, and I'm just going to say team spirit again, because I can't think of a better phrase for it.
It's funny. Like, so you are quite right. Europeans have built a reputation, and the likes of Paul McGinley and Thomas Bjorn have built, away from golf, like leadership business careers from this now, in terms of like the European blueprint and the playbook the invisible manual that gets handed down from captain to captain, that was, it's sort of steeped in folklore almost now, isn't it? It's sort of Tony Jacklin sort of set it up, and people are adding their chapters. And, you know, when someone else gets the captaincy, they like to think about, you know, the captains that influence them. And is it like the analytical side, like a Bernard Langer? Is it like the passion of like a Sam Torrance or a Seve or someone like that? Paul McGinley started the sort of stats revolution, Thomas Bjorn, the way he sort of set up the Golf National. The picks is just another element of it this year in terms of, changing that dynamic again. it is 2021 is going to be a real David versus Goliath thing. I don't think you can make any bones about that. And I don't think the European team are going to hide from that either. Yes, they've got two absolute megastars of world golf in Jon Rahm and Rory McIlroy. And typically it's, you know, who's going to fill spots 8 to 10 on that European roster, and how can we get the best out of those players so they don't go 0-4, you know, against, because the US team is as strong as it's ever been, really. Like, the Whistling Straits team was crazy, and yet you're adding in Max Homer and Will Zalatoris and guys like that to this team, and it's pretty intimidating, to be honest with you. Like, Sam Burns is going to be on that team now, and he's now the world match play champion. So yeah, it's going to be a real David versus Goliath. And I think if anyone's ever been part of a team sport, when you have your backs to the wall or you are an underdog, it does foster that certain camaraderie, doesn't it? So yeah, it just adds another element to it. And whilst sort of publicly expectations will be lower, Luke Donald, you can bet your bottom dollar he's dedicating 2 years of his life to succeeding on the golf course, and it will be a no stone left unturned. So it will be interesting to see if we get to Rome and it's, you know, 6-inch rough or whatever, you know, like we had in Paris. There will be so much sort of data that goes into it and stuff. So it's every iteration of it is different. And yeah, it always makes for a bit of intrigue, because it's not one on paper. So yeah.
Well, that's the thing coming out of 21, wasn't it? Everyone, or even going into it, everyone said this is potentially the strongest Ryder Cup team of all time. And then you were looking at the list of players that didn't even make the team, and you were thinking the US could build two Ryder Cup teams that probably would have destroyed the Europeans in Whistling Straits. But like you say, going forward this year, perhaps there is going to be that more. Well, everyone I've spoken to from a European's perspective just thinks we're going to get hammered again this year. So perhaps that kind of, like, as you call it, the underdog story of it might just be, well, OK, everyone thinks Luke Donald could walk into that changing room and go, everyone thinks we're going to get absolutely thrashed this week. Let's go out and prove them wrong. And that's probably about, you know, sort of like almost that like Seve kind of spirit of absolutely Getting everyone together.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, there's so many cliches in sport, right? And a key one is you can't, there are certain things that are out of your control. So all they can do is focus on putting out the best pairings they can, whether it's tried and tested combinations or whether it's, you know, things that the 21st group that advised the European team have said, look, if you pair Hovland with Fitzpatrick and you have Fitzpatrick teeing off on odds, you're not going to beat them. And if Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay rock up and shoot 8 under par on them, then there's not a lot you can do. Yes, the last team for the US was seen as the strongest team ever. I can remember going to Paris, they said the exact same thing, and then look what happened there. Like, everyone was terrified of Tiger Woods because he just won the Tour Championship and sort of beat Rory in that final group. And then he didn't win any of his four matches that week. And everyone thought, oh, Woods has been paired with Reed. Like, what a fantastic pairing. And it's letting Spieth play with Justin Thomas, who's like his best friend. And yeah, Woods and Reed both like really, really struggled that week and stuff. So it's like, it's like I said sort of slightly earlier, every different Ryder Cup is its own thing. And yeah, they absolutely have an opportunity to sort of like band together this European team and just see what happens. And you always see it when Europe get beat in the press conference on the Sunday night, they sort of shrug their shoulders and say, well, look, what can we do? We've had a brilliant time, and we've affected everything that we can affect, and that's been a positive experience. So if you do those, the score usually takes care of itself. There's another sort of, you know, cliche for you. But
I was at Phil Mickelson, Tom Watson press conference in 14. It was brutal. Let's just go we touched upon it very briefly. Let's just talk about the match play this weekend, because first of all, I'm just going to run through it. So Adrian Meronk, Sepp Straka, Seamus Power, Shane Lowry, Victor Hovland, Victor Perez, Fleetwood, Norrin, and most worryingly, Hatton went 0-3-0, and John Rom went out in the group as well. McIlroy was the only player, Fitzpatrick as well, sorry. McIlroy was the only player that went through. Of course, he went on to play or lose in the semi-finals. The only player to come out of his group from the 12 European players. Will Luke Donald be looking at that and be worried?
I don't think he will be particularly worried, because we're not playing the Ryder Cup at Austin Country Club. What's maybe worrying is that there's only 12 Europeans out of 64 in the field. Like, if you go back to when it was sort of, we used to play at Dove Mountain out in Arizona, I remember half the field was seemingly European.
Sure.
So I think that's probably more of a concern. And look,
we should probably note that Justin Rose would have played. He pulled out, of course.
Yes, he was someone that was eligible and decided not to play. Although he has sort of very publicly said that the Ryder Cup is a huge part of why he hasn't gone to Liv. So that's interesting. It's just, I think he's just trying to manage his calendar in a very specific way.
He wants that green jacket.
Yeah, that's it. So after his sort of loss to Sergio a few years back, that it's funny. I'm on a very brief tangent. That would have put him in the Hall of Fame.
Of course.
A double major winner, Olympic champion, and a fantastic Ryder Cup record. And I saw a still very recently of his putt on 18, and 2 inches out, it looks like it's going centre cup. It's absolutely crazy. But just to go back to this match play, look, it's great that the likes of Straka and Meronk have elevated their games to get into a field like that. And Meronk especially, playing solely in Europe, it's fantastic that he's been able to sort of, get into a field like that. The next thing is, how do we get the Bob McIntyres and the Jordan Smiths and people like that sort of into that field? And the fact is, you don't now, because the WGC isn't going to exist after this year, which is another matter altogether. And look, you can shoot 9 under par and get beat in match play, can't you? So like, we had, there's been some amazing matches this week where I saw one where Sahith Theegala against Minwoo Lee on day one, they shot a best ball 58 between them. And Sahith was, however many under on his own ball and got beat. And yet you can shoot 5 over and win your match. So there's elements to it. I really liked Tyrrell Hatton as sort of one to watch this week in Austin. He seems in really good form and stuff, but it looked like he had some sort of injury on the first morning. He's got Shane Lowry's old caddy on his back, I noticed, Bo. And
his caddy's had surgery, so yeah.
Okay.
He's got Bo on the bag this for a couple of weeks. Yeah, he did look like he was struggling, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, he was
not just with his temperament.
No, on the early coverage, it looked like he was on the range and about to tee off or whatever, and whether it was wrist or his neck or something like that, it looked like he was sort of having some medical attention anyway. So there's not massive cause for concern. I think it's we're still 200 days out or whatever it is from the Ryder Cup as well. So you've got to take everything with a pinch of salt. It's like I said before, Lee Westwood nearly won the Players in 2021 and then did nothing all year, but that was enough to get him into the Ryder Cup team. And then he was against, and Bryson was smashing it 485 yards down the fairway or whatever when he was cutting corners. So it's pinch of salt time. I don't think anyone should be too worried, but in the same breath, it would be nice to see some other Europeans besides Rory and Rahm step up and sort of show some form, and sort of that be reflected in their sort of strokes gained statistics or, the data golf rankings that sort of exist online as well. If you look at those at the moment, the American team is absolutely dwarfing the European team. I looked at them a couple of weeks ago. Ricky Fowler's like listed as the 25th best American or something, and he'd absolutely walk into that European side statistically at the moment. So again, that's like, it's a bit of a reality check in terms of where the two teams are at. So look, we'll wait and see. Like, you never know, someone, Alex Noren could win the Masters, and then, you know, what does that do? You know, Francesco Molinari lifted the claret jug, beaten Tiger Woods heads up and stuff like that. So and then went 5-0 in Paris. So things can happen and things can change. And yeah, you can bet your bottom dollar that Luke Donald will just be speaking to the European guys and saying, focus on yourselves. And yeah, we'll see where everything falls, you know, come August, September time. And then we prepare accordingly.
We should probably also note that in the opposite field event, Matt Wallace, first PGA Tour win, and Nikolai Højgaard was 2 inches away from joining him in a playoff. So there's two other players that will be on Luke Donald's mind.
There's green shoots, and Thomas Dietrich was right in the mix as well. And he's quietly having a very, very good rookie year on the PGA Tour as well. Obviously came over and played Hero Cup in the UAE at the start of the year, which shows he's kind of in the leadership's thoughts as a potential Ryder Cup player. And both Højgaard and Wallace played as well, didn't they? So that's massive for Matt Wallace. It puts a pretty rough week at the Valspar, where he was sort of yelling at his caddy behind him and stuff. And I know they've been quite active on social to say, look, it was just a heat of the moment thing. But yeah, Matt Wallace he was a prolific winner when he came through on the European Tour, and he was very unlucky to not make Thomas Bjorn's side in Paris. And yeah, there's been a bit of a dip, but it will be really interesting to see with Matt Wallace now. It's going to boost his world ranking. He's got a 2-year exemption on the PGA Tour. You know, even though it's an opposite field event, it's sort of one of the perks. He can go deep into the FedEx Cup and the playoffs and stuff like that. Does that free him up to play better golf? Because he know his card's secure. It's not about making cuts now. It's about going low and seeing what's what, and, you know, make birdies, and that makes you a good four ball player, doesn't it? So, Matt Wallace is someone that was right on the periphery of my thoughts, despite him playing Hero Cup. It was like, well, he's sort of down, nearly down sort of 150, 200 in the world rankings, and the stats aren't there. But with this win, it's really interesting how 1 week can really change, well, your life and, you know, your prospects of making your first Ryder Cup. So it will be really interesting to see. But yeah, fantastic. Højgaard is in the mix as well. And yeah, I've already touched on Dietrich. I'm an enormous fan of Dietrich. So yeah, it will be that there are green shoots, but they are the depth of the US team is so intimidating that their 11th guy on their team is like Jordan Spieth, which is nuts. So yeah, it will be interesting to see how those sort of 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 spots on that European team fill out, and the guys that make it will have earned it, and that would be really good to see.
Can you, just before we wrap this up, can you, obviously I'm looking at, we're thinking like McIlroy, Rahm obviously going to be on the team, and then of course you're looking at Hatton, Fitzpatrick, Rose will almost certainly be on the team, Victor Hovland, you know, that's making up the core of the team. Is there anyone, we've talked about the likes of Yannick Poole, but then there's obviously Perez, Ategi, depending on what's going on with him and Liv, and Anton Rosner, we've got the Højgaard twins. There's a number of players coming through and playing really nice golf. Obviously Matt Wallace we just mentioned there. Is there anyone outside of our thoughts that you could potentially see making a late run at it, or are we looking at this and going, right, the 12's going to come from those names that are there or thereabouts?
I think there are some outliers. So Rory spoke at Wentworth about, he called it like a core seven or something like that, which is himself, Rahm, Hovland, Hatton, Fitz, Lowry, Fleetwood. Whether they qualify or whether they need a pick, those seven are going to make the team. Justin Rose and Alex Noren are basically there as well. That makes nine. And then there's a few spots up for grabs, and And yeah, so there's that sort of, there's that pot to pick from, isn't there? Power and Maronk and Straka and Perez and Olesen, you know, guys that, the nice thing is, look, you can look at whatever you want, whether it's you pick a horse for the course. And I don't know what Marco Simone favours in terms of is it a bomber's paradise or whatever. That's for the stats nerds to do. In terms of the real outsiders, there's it depends on you want to see players that how they perform when the pressure is highest. So the fact that Danny Willett has won a Masters and you know he's done it under sort of intense pressure, is that credit in the bank despite it being 6 years ago or whatever it was, you know? The other ones that are completely left field. So Aaron Rye is one that he's low down on the points, didn't play Hero Cup, but is playing PGA Tour. So he's playing against the best week in, week out. And similar to Thomas Dietrich, is being quite successful. We saw him make a good run at the Players. You've got the home favourites from Italy. So you've got Guido Migliozzi and Francesco Molinari are both options. Although, again, they are ranked lower. And Frankie seems to have just tailed off slightly after playing really positively in the Hero Cup and pairing up with Hogarth and stuff. But is that worth 2 points for having him in the team? It's a bit like Stephen Gallagher got a pick at Glen Eagles, didn't he, ahead of Luke Donald? And Paul McGinley says, yeah, I 10 times out of 10, that was the right decision, despite the fact Gallagher didn't contribute a point. He was in form and the crowd sort of really got behind him and stuff like that. So it would be interesting to see if they look to get an Italian, as long as they're worthy of their place on the team. And then the real interesting one is Ludvig Åberg, who's the number one ranked amateur player in the world. He's already playing on sponsors exemptions on the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour. He's sort of gone down a bit of a more of a Morikawa route, where he's about 23, I think, 24, but is already making cuts and statistically outperforming the majority of European golfers. He is set to turn professional this summer. If he is still ranked number one on this, there's a PGA Tour University ranking. If he's still number one on that, he goes straight to the PGA Tour and gets his tour card. So the fact he's already been playing in DP World Tour things, I do wonder if he is he makes for a very interesting and extremely left field choice. And it will be interesting to monitor that and to see. But there's so many variables that go into it. And the power is with Luke Donald in terms of, completing his team the way he thinks that we'll get the maximum output.
I think it's probably safe to say that you are the only person on the planet who has considered Ludvig Åberg for a place in the European Ryder Cup team. It's a remarkable shout.
There's quite a prominent American golf podcast where there's one of that team is a rather big fan of Ludvig, and so no free ads here, but he looks a phenomenal player. And do you know what? So as a very brief story, I was stuck on an aeroplane, just sort of on the tarmac waiting to take off, going from Brussels to London last summer. And I was sat next to a guy who was just coming back from a Challenge Tour event. And he was a Swedish golfer, a guy called Tim Widing. And he's now playing on the Korn Ferry Tour. And I think I had a Ryder Cup baseball cap on, or Abandoned Dunes or something like that.
Sure.
And so we just immediately got talking. And he was talking to me about some of the Swedes that he came up with. So he's the same age as Victor Hovland, so sort of was very familiar with his game. And Vincent Norman, who's another one that plays the PGA Tour, is a guy he was familiar with. But he said, Ludvig Åberg is a real one to watch. And he's been the best of all of them, you know, Hovland maybe included. So that's extremely high praise from a peer, and so I suppose that's what's tipped me off. But I would be extremely surprised if someone like that came from that far back to make it. I don't think we've seen that since. I remember Ricky Fowler got a pick in when it was in Wales, and he'd played Walker Cup in 2009 and then played Ryder Cup in 2010. So that was quite a prominent rise, but we haven't seen anything of the like since then. So, but maybe that's the route to take, and you go outside the box because you know what the American team's going to bring, and it's Scheffler Burns and it's Thomas Spieth and it's Cantlay Schauffele and, you know, whatever. So why not try something different? Because we went down the experience route in Wisconsin and it was a record defeat. So is it time to try something different?
I am absolutely. It's sort of like the Wayne Rooney effect, isn't it? Just bring him through. Bring them all through. These unknowns, get them out. The street golfers, we'll call them.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It.
All right, Rob, I really appreciate your time. I'll let you go. And let's definitely do this again between now and the Ryder Cup. And we'll perhaps in the middle of the summer, we can update on where we are and see how Ludvig Åberg is getting on at the start of his pro career. But if not for this year, then certainly one to watch in the future. So, all right. Cheers, Rob. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Alex. Take care.
Right. So that was Rob Giannotti of Blue on the Board. Thank you to him for coming on. We will definitely get him on again in the summer when we get a bit closer to the Ryder Cup, and maybe we can start really narrowing down who's going to make the team. Of course, we've got all those usual names there. He threw a couple of left field players out at the end, including the world number one amateur Ludvig Åberg, the Swede. I mean, that's a hell of a show, isn't it?
I've sort of heard his name floated around by a few people on social media.
It'd be as a Ryder Cup player?
Maybe not like that, but maybe just in terms of his overall form.
Okay.
He came tied 24th in Arnold Palmer and 61st and tied 61st at the Valspar. So those are his two appearances on the PGA Tour this season. I'm sure the world number one amateur would have no trouble finding the form to qualify for a Ryder Cup if they played on the DP World Tour or the PGA Tour regularly.
Rob noted that Ricky Fowler played Walker Cup in 2009 and then played Ryder Cup in 2010.
Wow.
So there is form for this. I just personally, I think it won't happen. I'm absolutely of the opinion that stuff like that should happen. I think it's brilliant when it does. And, you know, if you put Åberg in the team, the Americans aren't going to know what to do with him. It'd be absolutely brilliant. But yeah, so no, that was really interesting. Thanks to Rob for coming on. And thanks for you. Sorry it wasn't as long a chat as we normally have, but you have been off for the last few days. So just for the listeners, next week, obviously, start of Masters week, we'll have a big Masters preview episode. Mm-hmm. And we'll discuss who's going to win. Going to have to record that on Monday morning. And I'll be heading to Heathrow to get on a plane before
It's all right for some, isn't it?
Well,
no, very exciting.
Well, my big issue at the moment is that I'm a week away from heading to the Masters for the first time. And everyone around me is sick. My children are sick. Everyone in my family is sick. I'm holding myself up in this spare room.